I think the reason that some 28-29% are not comfortable voting for a Mormon is they think they're voting for Harry Reid. But that's not the case. I think as people say, would you vote for Mitt Romney? And they get to know me and my wife and my family. They realize that our values are as American as any values you'll find in the country. And they're comfortable with us. There'll be, of course, there'll be some who don't come on board. But by and large, people will make their decision not based on where you go to church, but instead based upon your values, your vision for the country, and your ability to actually help the country at a time of great need.
That, of course, is Mitt Romney running for the president. He's also running as a Mormon candidate for president. Some say it's a real possibility that he could be on the ballot for the Republican ticket. Could you vote for him as a Christian? Dr. Frank Beckwith joins us for the last 45 minutes of Issues Etc. We'll be answering that question, among others. He's Associate Professor of Philosophy and Jurisprudence at Baylor University in Waco, Texas, author of several books, including his latest, Defending Life. And he's also written an article for the latest Christian research journal titled, Is It Permissible for a Christian to Vote for a Mormon? Dr. Beckwith, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me.
Could you find yourself as a Christian voting for Mitt Romney?
Yes, I could. Now, of course, I don't want that to be interpreted as an endorsement of him because I haven't decided who I'm going to vote for. But I think in principle, there's nothing wrong with voting for someone who may not share your faith.
Does that in any way, would your hypothetical, albeit hypothetical, vote cast for Mitt Romney, should it come to that, should anyone interpret it as Beckwith's getting soft on the whole Mormonism issue?
That's a good question. No, I think one of the things that we have to do, in fact, just last or 2 weeks ago, I spoke at Princeton University as part of a conference on Mormonism and American politics, and I gave a paper on this issue. And one of the points that I made in the paper was that I think that Mormonism as a theological system is clearly outside the parameters of classical Christianity. There's no doubt about that. In fact, Mormon participants at the conference didn't disagree with me. But having said that, though, then the next question we have to ask ourselves is what sort of candidate, and this is something that everyone should ask themselves whenever they're voting on any election, what candidate best advances the common good? That is to say, what this candidate stands for, is it consistent with my theological tradition, and if so, is it the right candidate to choose, given the different options I have and given, let's say, the political realities out there? So I do think that when it comes to voting or any sort of political participation, all these factors come into play, and I think one can consistently affirm those sorts of considerations and at the same time say, look, I think the person's theological beliefs are wrong. I think those are perfectly consistent views to hold.
It seems to me that I've done that probably every time I've cast a ballot for president. Because there weren't any Lutherans running, and I could not claim absolute agreement theologically with any of them, and in some cases, very little agreement theologically with some of them.
That's right. In fact, that's true of myself as well. My first election, presidential election, which I could vote in was 1980, Ronald Reagan versus Jimmy Carter. And at the time, I was pretty divided, conflicted, that's the right word, for who I was going to vote for. Because on the one hand, Jimmy Carter was the incumbent president, was a Southern Baptist who held to, it seemed at the time, traditional Christian views on theological matters, taught Sunday school. Ronald Reagan was a nominal Presbyterian. And yet, many evangelicals, including myself, voted for Reagan because we thought that his values, it better advanced the common good than Jimmy Carter's. Now, that's not a knock against Jimmy Carter's personal faith. He may very well have been a more faithful man to his Christianity than Ronald Reagan. I can't judge that. But my point is that when it comes to voting, the considerations that we have to think about are those that involve the political realm.
You say that there are two mistakes that can be made. In the event that Governor Romney became the Republican nominee for president, one, a mistake that Romney could make himself, and the other, we'll come back to that, we've discussed it a little bit.
Sure.
The mistake a Christian voter might make if should he become the nominee. What's the mistake that Romney could make?
I call it the Kennedy mistake or the candidate snare. That is, some of your listeners, in fact, many of them may very well have heard of the famous speech that John F. Kennedy gave in 1960 when he was U.S. Senator from Massachusetts and running for the presidency. He was going to have a very difficult time winning any states in which there was a predominantly Baptist and, in some cases, other Protestant population. He was the first Roman Catholic that was had a serious chance of winning the presidency. And that's one of the reasons, by the way, he chose Lyndon Johnson as his running mate. He was able to win Texas, which had a very sizable Baptist and Methodist population, and still does. Well, Kennedy gave this speech in Houston in September 1960, in which he told the audience, consisting almost all of Baptist ministers, that he would, in fact, not permit his faith to interfere with his presidency if he were to be elected president. And this apparently pleased the audience, and it probably helped him to win election 2 months later. Well, one of the temptations that Governor Romney may have, and there are rumors that he may or may not give such a speech, is that he may very well give that speech, but I'm not sure that would be effective in convincing those that would be his likely allies in the election. And what I mean by that is that because of his conservative moral and political views, his closest allies politically would be evangelicals, conservative Protestants of a variety of denominations, and conservative Catholics. And those folks want somebody that takes their theology seriously, even if we think their theology is mistaken. That is, if we know, for example, that Mitt Romney's Mormonism helps inform him about the nature of human rights, that human beings are made in the image of God and ought to be protected under the law, that, in fact, religious liberty is something implied by Scripture and the Christian moral tradition, that makes us more confident that he will, in fact, stick to his principles. And so in a weird way, by actually distancing himself from his faith, he could very well be telling other citizens who may not share his faith, let's say more mainline Christians and evangelicals and Catholics, that he, in fact, doesn't take religion seriously. And so that actually may give those that are, hostile to any religious participation in politics, a kind of way of saying, look, even your candidate, let's say if you happen to be politically conservative, believes that religion has no place. So I think it would be dangerous for him to concede that point to the secularist.
Folks, I want to hear from you. Could you vote for a Mormon?
Oh, absolutely, I could vote for a Mormon. In fact, I voted for Mormons. I lived in Nevada for quite some time. I taught for 9 years at the University of Nevada in Las Vegas.
Well, then you didn't have a choice, did you?
Well, there were some elections where you had two Mormons running against each other, both a Democrat and a Republican. In fact, the senior senator from Nevada is Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader, who's also Mormon. So I don't know. I think I actually voted for Reid once in 1982 when he was a congressman. When he ran for Congress. But Nevada, we had a large number of Mormon candidates. In fact, I helped a couple of them in their elections.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issue ZTC at KFUO.org. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, November the 21st. Frank Beckwith is our guest, asking the question, can a Christian vote for a Mormon? Kurt is calling from Edwardsville. Hi, Kurt.
Pastor Todd, thank you. I'm very disappointed in the opinions of the guest that you have right now. He sounds very intelligent, but I really wonder if he really knows much about Mormonism. There is no wilder, more wacky history available to be read than the history of Mormonism. It's absolutely mind-turning. You turn your mind inside out just reading about the history and all the theology, which is wacky.
So what are your concerns there, Kurt?
Well, that's one concern, is that if a Roman Catholic is running, I want him to be good Roman Catholic. If a Mormon's running, I want him to be a bad Mormon, okay? Let me just say another thing. Mormonism, and Mr. Beckwith is comparing Mormonism to Roman Catholicism, which is ludicrous. Roman Catholicism is not a cult. Mormonism is a cult. What do I mean by that? I mean that Mormons, as they are expert marketers or tremendous marketers as they go up, as they advance their cause, as they've done for decades, they will repackage themselves in an effort to deceive people as to what their theology is. They are not truthful. And I think that's the difference between a religion and a cult. Mitt Romney's involved in a cult. Mormons are not honest about what they believe. They are ultimately deceptive in trying to draw people into their circle.
All right, Kurt, you have raised two very good questions. Thank you very much for waiting there in Edwardsville. Let's deal with both of them.
Yeah, that's a really good question. Well, one thing I do want to tell your audience that I am Catholic. So, and I understand that there is a huge difference between Mormonism and not only Catholicism, but just traditional creedal Christianity, which is embraced by both Catholics and Protestants and Lutherans as well, obviously.
What do you make of Kurt's, it sounds like he has a threefold concern, kind of the anyone who would believe that probably shouldn't be president line.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I think there's a couple, but let me just, I want to clarify that I've written a number of books on Mormonism, and I have made the argument, as I said at the beginning, Mormonism is clearly not consistent with creedal Christianity. And in fact, my allusion to the Kennedy speech only had to do with the speech and religion, not comparing Mormonism to Catholicism by any means. So that's, I want to clarify that. But his other point is sort of like, how can anyone believe that kind of stuff? You know, and be a rational person. And so we don't want to vote for people that seem to be irrational. Well, there's a couple of problems with that. One, that there are people that, in fact, have run for office, who have served the public well, who, in fact, believe many things that a lot of us would consider irrational. For example, there are people that belong to Freemasonry. And now Freemasonry has beliefs and rituals that I personally think are insane. But some of these people have been some of the best and greatest leaders in American history, including George Washington, Bob Dole. So the fact that somebody may be able to hold to beliefs in their private life or some sort of ritualistic aspect of their life doesn't mean that they are not, in fact, good public servants. In fact, I would argue that in the case of Romney, he has exhibited a level of rationality and good judgment as governor of Massachusetts, as well as a businessman, that I think shows that he, in fact, holds religious beliefs that many of us believe are not reasonable, but at the same time is able to conduct his life in ways that is perfectly reasonable and clearly above average and excellent.
What about Kurt's concern that Mormonism has cultic aspects, and he's particularly concerned about the deceptive nature or the willingness to misrepresent itself? What are your thoughts?
That's a good question. I do think that there is a sense, and in fact, I will share with you some of the Mormons that I met last week, some academic Mormons, their professors at different universities. We actually discussed this issue over lunch about, you know, the apparent lack of candor in the part of some Mormons, and I think there's a couple of reasons for that. One is not always purposeful deception. Sometimes it's a kind of awkwardness. You know, they hold beliefs that they understand are not embraced by mainstream Christians. It's, you know, it's sometimes difficult for people that are not trained, you know, in theology to express themselves in ways that would be acceptable. So I think some of it is a kind of defensiveness and an attempt to protect themselves. After all, they have been a persecuted minority in American religious history. Secondly, I do think that many Mormons, when they communicate their faith to those of us that are not Mormons, are not intentionally trying to be deceptive. They are simply expressing it, in many cases, with the language of sort of American Christianity that's part of the lingua franca of American culture. So sometimes we think they're trying to be deceptive, but they're just sometimes just trying to express their faith in ways that we can understand. So I do think that there is something about the way in which the church, the Mormon church, presents itself that is clearly public relations, and that has to do with the emphasis on those aspects of their church life that they think people will find attractive, namely their view of family, their community, and so forth. And I do think, though, that anyone who's interested in Mormonism, if they begin to dig deeper and look at the amount of resources that are out there on the Internet, that they will find out that Mormonism is, in fact, inconsistent with classical Christianity. So I think it's a lot more complicated than Kurt is explaining, though I don't doubt that there are, in fact, people that present their faith in ways that lack candor. One of the things we have to remember is that there are numerous cases in the history of Christianity where Christians have done things that are crazy. I mean, I think of, for example, some of the stories that we hear about in the history of, let's say, the Pentecostal movement. Or, you know, then of course there are fine Pentecostal leaders, including John Ashcroft, the former attorney general, and yet there are some aspects of that history that are kind of quirky and weird. So, you know, we have to be careful when we start saying, you know, this religious history has weirdness to it, because that could be found in our own as well.
Let's see what Joe has to say, calling from his car. Hi, Joe.
Hi. First of all, if I vote, am I not voting for a sinner either way? And can I go ahead and just use the candidate's faith as a factor to consider in picking the lesser of two evils? And by way of example, I think I would be inclined to vote for a non-Christian who held a pro-life position over a Christian of any persuasion or denomination, or a person of a, you know, a member of a cult or Mormonism or something like that.
Yeah,
Joe, thank you.
That's a great insight. It's something that I don't disagree with. I do think that there are times where, supposing you have two people running for office, one of which is a devout Christian, let's say, lives their faith well, but is not fully competent in the areas that are necessary to be an elected official. And so you have somebody else who's not a Christian but lives an exemplary life otherwise and seems competent. I mean, I would most likely vote for the non-Christian if the person's views, let's say, align generally with mine or the ones I think are correct. So I do think that's a very good insight and one that is worth embracing.
Up next, here's Dave, also calling from his car. Hi, Dave.
Hi. I just want to throw out one name, going back 50 years, but it's a name I think that was revered. I think he did a good job. Ezra Taft Benson.
Yes.
Was the Secretary of Agriculture under Eisenhower, and I believe generally he was thought to do a good job. His Mormonism didn't get in the way, just as a person to refer to.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave.
Yeah, I think he was Secretary of the Interior, if I'm not mistaken. And if that's the case, then he was helpful in the Eisenhower administration in putting together the interstate highway system. And that's not so bad.
I got a ton of questions. I wish I could have you for another 2 hours, but we've got callers waiting. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up next, Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Very well.
Good. Hey, you know, it sounds like to me a lot of Christians have, going back to the classic Lutheran definition of two kingdoms, and we seem to be circling back to this a lot, where we want to elect a president who not only do we agree with on social and political issues, but is theologically compatible with us also. And so we're looking for not just commander-in-chief, but theologian-in-chief also.
Thank you, and Steve. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and so what I see that is, and then the other point I have, and this is something that came up yesterday in the show, was it occurred to me is about voting for a Mormon. Well, if people look at Mormonism as a set of moral values, and then they look at many evangelical churches which propagate Christianity as a set of moral values and nothing really more than that, then there is going to be confusion. But that's not confusion due to Mormonism, that's confusion due to the church not being the church.
Thanks, Steve. Thank you very much. Dr. Beckwith.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I agree with that Luther was correct on this, that in fact there's a distinction between church and state, and I think it's something that one finds deep into Christian history. Sometimes Christians haven't lived it entirely consistently, but it's clear that going all the way back to Christ's comment about Caesar's coin. I mean, distinctions are made between the church and the state, and that leadership in the state has different sorts of qualifications and virtues than one may want in a church leader. So, although there are obviously overlapping virtues that both should have.
Another call before our break. Frank from Las Vegas. Hi, Frank.
Thank you for taking my call. Just a couple quick points. First of all, Dr. Beckwith, I'd like to know whether or not if the candidate was an ardent Muslim, if whether or not you would feel the same way. And secondly, my observation based upon the calls and the tenor of this conversation is to say, and I understand where you're coming from, that how a person governs in the left-hand kingdom or the temporal realm could possibly have very little to do with his private beliefs, and that's what Romney would have you believe and a lot of other people. But the question is, I'm looking for a candidate that's a clear-headed thinker, and I really take exception where you're comparing differences between, like, a Baptist and a Lutheran and or a Roman Catholic and a Mormon. And I think the earlier caller, I think he had a good point. Mormons believe that they're going to be gods of their own planet. And you know, they're really in a totally different ballpark in that respect. And I don't know why anybody, I mean, I have a hard, the fact that he's pro-life is really an asset to me. But how somebody could actually believe they're going to be gods of their own planet and resurrect their wife from the dead, I mean, you have to get to the point where you really have to say that they're really not even in the bona fide religions of the Western world.
Frank, our time is very short here. Yeah. Let's see if we can get Dr. Beckwith's response to, yeah. If it were a Muslim, would you have the same considerations?
I would ask the same sorts of questions about a Muslim as I would about a Mormon or a Catholic or a Lutheran. It really wouldn't matter to me. I would, though, be interested in how much of the Muslims' view of church and state influences their own policy views, because that is something that Muslim or Islamic jurisprudence deals with, and there's no comparable type of thought in Mormon thinking. The second comment, I mean...
Well, if you could save your answer,
sure,
on the second comment for when we come back from the break, then we
sure
can give you as much time as you need. Dr. Frank Beckwith is our guest. Can a Christian vote for a Mormon is the question. I want to hear from you. 1-800-730-2727 or 505-7850. Email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Dr. Beckwith is Associate Professor of Philosophy and Jurisprudence at Baylor University in Waco, Texas. Author of several books, including his latest, Defending Life, and he's also written an article for the latest Christian Research Journal titled, Is It Permissible for a Christian to Vote for a Mormon? Friday on the program, Dr. Carl Fikencher will join us. We'll talk about the person and work of the Holy Spirit. Sunday night, big review night. We're going to be reviewing Joel Osteen's new book, Become a Better You. Our guest Sunday night, Dr. Larry Rass. That's Sunday night from 10 to 11 on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis. From 9 to 11 at kfuo.org. When we come back, 10 more minutes with Dr. Frank Beckwith on the Mormonism of Mitt Romney and his candidacy for president. You know, you got to wonder here, if he does make this big, much-discussed speech where he backs away in a Kennedy-esque manner, will it be good for him as a candidate? We'll answer one of those questions after this.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hi, this is Chuck Rathard inviting you to join us 10 o'clock on Thanksgiving Day. No Bible study during that hour, but we will have live worship, a broadcast from our good friends at Salem Lutheran Church in Blackjack. We'll get back to Bible study on Friday. But 10 o'clock Thanksgiving Day, live worship from Salem, Blackjack.
The Bible Study on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Concordia Christian Books and Gifts, serving God's people.
Marriage without commitment will not succeed.
Kids, we feel, are different at birth.
The best way to improve your sex life might be to go help your wife with the dishes.
You can build a stable relationship.
I believe the wisdom comes from the Scriptures, and it's been...
Solid words of guidance and encouragement from Dr. James Dobson on Focus on the Family. Heard weekdays right here.
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Interracial marriage from God's perspective.
Answers with Ken Ham, president of the Answers in Genesis Ministry. Ken, does the Bible have anything at all to say about interracial marriage?
Well, let's think about this carefully, Mark. How would you answer the following question? I'm going to list four combinations of married couples, and I want you to consider which one God would be against, according to the Bible. First, a Christian man with almond-shaped eyes and a Christian woman with Caucasian eyes. Second, a non-Christian man married to a non-Christian woman. Third, a Christian man with dark skin and a Christian woman with light skin. And fourth, a non-Christian Caucasian man married to a Christian Caucasian woman. You know, from a biblical perspective, it's the last one. The only one of those marriages that God speaks against in the Bible is the Christian marrying a non-Christian. This is what I'd call an interracial marriage. The saved race, if you will, marrying the unsaved race. Sadly, because so many Christians have been indoctrinated by evolutionary ideas, they think humans are divided into different physical races. Many end up concerned about people from so-called different races marrying rather than whether or not they are equally yoked spiritually, which is the most important thing in marriage.
More fascinating information on this topic is found in Ken Ham's booklet on the origin of the so-called races. In fact, he offers a Genesis solution to the problem of racism. The booklet's free by going to our website, answersradio.com.
Hello, this is Kay Meyer of Family Shield. God's Word tells us to sanctify Christ as Lord in your heart, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence. Join us next time as we help individuals learn to discern truth from error in today's world.
Saturday morning at 11 on AM 850 KFUO.
Dr. Dean Wenthe, president of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the important work of Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief.
It has done a remarkable job of joining acts of mercy to the center of Christian theology, namely Christ and his saving work for us. There in the past has been a tendency to do one or the other, that is, on the one hand, to proclaim the gospel and neglect the very real human needs, or the opposite extreme has been to tend to human needs but not to bring the saving gospel of Christ to bear. And Pastor Harrison and his staff share with us the conviction that these two go hand in hand.
Find LCMS World Relief at our website, issuesetc.org, or call 1-888-930-4438.
I don't feel bad at all about people asking me about my faith. I think it's natural. Most people don't know very much about it, and if they have questions about the doctrines of my church, I typically direct them to the church because they could probably do a better job explaining than I can. But in terms of my values, what I think about the future of the country, how my faith impacts my thoughts about important issues, that I'm of course, open to all those topics. I'm not going to try and distance myself in any way, shape, or form from my faith. It was the faith of my fathers. I'm, as I say, true blue through and through. And so I accept the teachings of our church.
We're talking about Mitt Romney as a possible presidential candidate, and we're talking with Dr. Frank Beckwith, asking the question and answering the question, can a Christian vote for a Mormon? 10 more minutes in our conversation, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Before we go on to Frank's next question, Dr. Beckwith, does it sound to you from that comment on Romney's part that he's going to be doing the Kennedy kind of distancing himself from his own faith for the sake of gaining the White House?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I mean, I do think what he's trying to say is this. Look, I'm not a theologian. I'm not an expert in my faith in the sense that I'm equipped to answer, you know, these difficult theological questions. But I don't think he is I think where he differs from Kennedy is in this regard. He's willing to say these are legitimate questions and that he doesn't blame people for being interested in knowing more about his faith. I do think, though, that he would be wise in saying that his faith is important to him insofar as it shapes his character and is essential in his own beliefs about right and wrong and fundamental rights. In other words, I would give a kind of, I would advise him to give a kind of defense of American democracy based on Mormon principles. That is, in other words, he could assure people that he's firmly committed to religious liberty and fundamental rights, and at the same and because of his Mormonism, not in spite of it. I think will make people actually more confident in him as a candidate.
You know, you had mentioned before that Kennedy had essentially said back there in 1961, I'm not going to let my Roman Catholic faith interfere with my job as president. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if anyone can honestly do that now in presidential politics, even though it's still considered the height of political genius to do so. I'd much rather have a candidate, regardless of their faith, say, look, my faith interferes with my life all day long. There's not an aspect of my life that my faith doesn't interfere with.
Well, when I was at Princeton 2 weeks ago, Richard Land from the Southern Baptist Convention made this wonderful observation. He said that the reason why John Kerry did not attract as many Catholics as George Bush is because he wasn't listening to the Pope. So the irony is that in 1960, American Protestants were upset that Kennedy would listen to the Pope. Now American Protestants want their Catholic candidates to listen to the Pope.
That's ironic. Now, Frank raised again, as another caller had earlier, the whole issue of can we say that a Mormon who he says he's true blue through and through, he knows what he believes and he knows why he believes it, given that some of the things that Mormons do believe, should this call into question his ability to think critically, one of those skills that's kind of fundamental to running the United States on a day-to-day basis?
Not at all, and I think it's a legitimate question, but remember, first off, that this question could be raised against traditional Christians as well. There are people like Richard Dawkins, Christopher Hitchens, and Sam Harris who believe that Christianity is based on miracle claims, which I believe as well, and these claims are so crazy, why would anybody be considered rational who believes in them? So we have to be careful that we don't treat Mormonism, we don't discard Mormonism simply because of the nature of the claims. Now, clearly, Mormon claims, I do not believe, are even remotely close to being established like classical Christian claims. But So we have to be very careful that we just simply don't go out there and we say, oh, they believe in that people see angels. Well, so do we. We have to be very careful in how we use that language. Secondly, I do believe that people believe all sorts of things in one part of their life that they don't believe in another, and we don't consider that to be odd. People, for example, belong sometimes to civic groups or to fraternities or sororities or fraternal organizations that believe and practice things that some of us may consider to be a little crazy, but we don't think that somehow requires that they in fact maintain that type of mental attitude towards everything in their life. That may be inconsistent, but that's the way human beings in fact are.
Dr. Beckwith, yesterday we asked our listeners, do you think that Romney's run for the White House and his possible gaining of the White House might cause some to take a serious look at the Mormon faith, to consider the Mormon faith. Do you think that this is possible, and is this something that we should consider on whether or not to vote for Mitt Romney?
Well, I think that of all the questions raised, I think that's probably the most important. And I don't think though that it helps or hurts Mormonism. In fact, if anything, it may hurt Mormonism, and here's why. Ask yourself this question. Has evangelical Christianity benefited evangelistically from the presidency of George W. Bush? It's not clear. And even though President Bush associates himself with evangelicals, I think that there's some argument could be made that there's been, in some cases, too close of a connection between his policies and the gospel. Now, my own view, having voted for President Bush twice, is that I agree with most of his policies. But if, in fact, the argument is, does it advance the cause of evangelical Christianity having had him been president, I'm not sure. So we have to look at historically. In addition, there are some Mormons I've spoken to privately who are concerned that a Romney presidency will actually result in people more closely investigating Mormonism and then rejecting it. So in a weird way, it may very well expose Mormonism to a type of public investigation that it's never undergone before, which may not benefit it. So I think it's not clear what would exactly happen if Romney were to be elected president in terms of advancing the cause of Mormonism.
Finally, then, with only about 30 seconds, tell us about your new book, Defending Life.
Well, it's just came out with Cambridge University Press. It's a critique of the abortion, what I call the abortion choice position, that is, those that call themselves pro-choice, and it's also a defense of the pro-life position. And it differs from my book, Politically Correct Death, which I published 14 years ago. In this sense, I deal with different arguments that have been made over the past two decades that I didn't address in Politically Correct Death, and I also deal with what's wrong with Roe v. Wade as a legal opinion, in addition to a chapter on stem cells and embryo cloning, which are new technologies that really weren't in focus in the early 1990s. So I'm very quite pleased that it was accepted by Cambridge, which is the number one rated academic publisher in the world. So professionally, it's been deeply gratifying to know that that's being published by them. But it's also written in such a way that, you know, you don't have to be an expert in philosophy to understand it.
Dr. Frank Beckwith is Associate Professor of Philosophy and Jurisprudence at Baylor University, author of several books, his latest, Defending Life. He's also written an article for the latest Christian Research Journal titled, Is It Permissible for a Christian to Vote for a Mormon? And Dr. Beckwith, speaking as a Lutheran to you, a Roman Catholic, I want you to know you seem to have a very good grasp on that biblical Lutheran two-kingdom theology.
I have studied church-state history. You know, my original appointment at Baylor was in church-state studies, so I'm very familiar with that, and I have great respect for Luther, and especially, I think there's a quote attributed to him that I'm not sure it's apocryphal or real. He said, "I'd rather be ruled by an incompetent or a competent Turk than an incompetent Christian."
Yeah, Luther's full of apocryphal sayings.
So
it's always
difficult.
I'm
not sure he said that, but I agree with it.
Kind of wish he had. Thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Well, a happy Thanksgiving to everybody listening, and we'll be back next week live Monday on the program. Sunday night, oh my goodness, we're going to review Joel Osteen's book with Larry Rast. We're going to go through it, listen to what Joel has to say in that book, Becoming a Better You, and see what Dr. Larry Rast has to say. It'll be a very interesting conversation. It's from 10 to 11 on 91.5 FM here in St. Louis. You can also hear it from 9 to 11 at kfuo.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. Happy Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues, Etc., please visit the audio archive section at kfuo.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM 850 KFUO. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.